and we're gonna go to Amandla, and they're overall over in CKUT, Amandla in Montreal, and they're gonna be talking about Mali and the warring factions in the Sahara.
Listen, it's been very, very, I've just been astounded over the last 2 days, January 1st, January 2nd, the Globe and Mail. I was so surprised to get a Globe and Mail on New Year's Day, but there was on my porch, and there, a full page on Mali and Canada and what could happen, and holy smokes, I said, Africa finally is getting decent coverage out of the Globe and Mail.
It's because the Canadian are going there, isn't it? That
was, yeah. Well, it's mixed signals. It's okay. Mixed signals, and on the one hand, we've got the Baird, Mr. Oh boy, I don't even want to give him a name because I could get slapped with a lawsuit. But that guy with the big mouth, he's certainly that there will be no boots on the ground in Mali, no Canadian boots on the ground. And at the same time, his defense minister, Sir Peter Mackay, who's used to boots in the mouth, has declared that we could be getting involved, and there's a way for Canada, you know, training, and we've got a good role at that, and so this is one of the articles on January 1st, and then a whole three quarter pages on Al Qaeda carving out its own country to prepare for war, and it's like this Al Qaeda thing is out of the blue. I don't know the way to describe it. How did it come to be Al Qaeda? Is it that anyway? The war on terror is where it comes from, and I got to be very clear that what we have is an article by Rukmini Kalimichi from Mufti Mali. Mufti is right up there, close to the border.
Yeah, it's actually right between this northern and southern part of Mali.
Absolutely. Yeah, and this, yeah. At this point, it's still part of the Mali that belongs
officially
to Mali.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's right there on the edge. And if you look at the map, the rebels have taken more than half of the country. Some say the size of Texas. Some say the size of France. It depends on whether you're French or Texan, who's bigger. And it's quite impressive about the whole plot for Al Qaeda to set up its own state and challenge the West, and then today in the January 2nd was the Mali mission holds political perils. Now Jeffrey York out of Johannesburg weighs in, and he counters Jane Tabor's article. And there's another article by Jane Tabor that speculates on how Canadian troops could end up in Mali, even though the Canadian foreign minister has said they shan't be there. And the Canadian defense minister has said, yes, we can do training. And she explains it, through the United Nations, if we got a request, it would come to our UN military delegation and they'd pass it on. And it's all very, let's have headlines. This, to me, is a very, very, and as I say, the other part of it is the whole point of how complicated it is getting into Mali and the various issues that are going on. First, a democratic government, now overthrown.
Yeah.
It doesn't get into the history of how many Tuareg rebellions have gone on in Mali, Mauritania, Niger, over the last few years, and how Algeria has worked so hard to contain their Tuareg population. Tuareg are amazing people that cross over many, many countries in the Sahara and Sahel, and they would be a nation if one had used those kinds of criteria of people and where they live and how they live, rather than setting up borders by artificial constructs. In any case, the article goes through a whole list of how Mali has deteriorated little by little, how the democratic government was overthrown, that the army that overthrew it had years and years of training by French and American and other international forces to make them sensitive to democracy and all, and then they still chased out the democratic elected government, no problem, and that just opened the door for, of course, the Tuaregs and especially the Tuaregs to take over, and then the Islamist forces with various names to oust the Tuaregs and impose a whole other agenda than what the Tuaregs were looking for. So there we are, two full days in the Toronto Globe and Mail, and I don't know, Musa, where the heck is all this coming from?
Well, Doug, I don't have the answer, but I remember we had a talk about this a few weeks ago, and I think there is somebody. So what I'm about to say is, first, that somebody is called Jeremy Keenan. He's a research professional at the London University, professional research associate at the Department of Social Anthropology. So that's where he works. I don't really know him. Since I'm reading the New Internationalist, he published an article on the last issue, December 12th issue of the New Internationalist, about what's really going on in northern Mali. So, Doug, I know you were mentioning about, you know, Islamists, Al-Qaeda, but seriously, before I read the article, I was a bit puzzled because you say there's so many groups. Now I see four, okay? There's the MNLA, which is Mouvement National de Libération Azawad. So these are the Tuaregs. And I think, if I remember well, you know, they're another form of that Tuareg rebellion, of those Tuareg rebellions that happened several times in the past decades. So yeah, there were one 2 years after the independence of Mali,
it's been
in the 60s,
on and on,
in the 90s, and in 2006 it started again. So the MNLA now it isn't a religious movement. It's really
ethnically based.
Yeah, it's like you said, for the independence of North Mali. And in April 2012, they control the northern part of Mali. So fine, okay.
One other element here to point out is that they exist in Algeria too, where the Tuareg population has always been a problem, mm-hmm. Much like the Amazigh, the Berber, have in eastern Algeria. Mm-hmm. The Tuareg form a serious base of opposition to the Algerian regime in southern Algeria, and they in large numbers. Numbers from across the Sahara went up to work for Muammar Gaddafi because it served his purposes in Libya, mm-hmm. to have peoples that knew the neighboring countries and were able to be subservient or willing to serve him should ever he want to call on them to go back to those countries. And then with his downfall and of course the suspicion in the country of anything mm-hmm. foreign, especially the Africans, the dark ones, many of them fled back to the Sahara, and they came back as it was coincidentally at the end throughout 2011 with the fall of Libya as a Gaddafi regime.
Yeah, what's interesting is when you mention Algeria, they actually, according to the Keenan's article, they consider northern Mali as their backyard, and they didn't expect such success from the MNLA. They were thinking that, okay, it's another Tuareg rebellion. It's going to fade. They won't succeed, but they were surprised. But now I continue. There are three other groups. You mentioned about Al-Qaeda. Actually, it's ACMI, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. And boom, we have another link with Algeria, because in 2007, there's a group, Groupe Salafiste pour la Prédication et le Combat. So it's the GSPC. It's an Algerian Islamic group, and they got affiliated with Al-Qaeda, and then we have the ACMI. So I think they're the ones who are in the news everywhere. When you read the Globe and Mail, we say we are going to northern Mali and Canada is going to train some troop over there, and the culprit is ACMI. But there are two other groups. There's Ansar Dine. It's an Islamic group that formed in March 2012, and they are former Tuareg. Actually, the leader, Ayad Agali, is a former Tuareg from the 90s and is now considered an Islamist. And there's a fourth group, the Mujao, which is Mouvement pour l'Unicité et le Djihad en Afrique de l'Ouest. And that group is a dissident group from ACMI. So there we have the MNLA, and then three groups considered Islamist: ACMI, Al-Qaeda in Maghreb, and Ansar Dine, which is actually a new form from a group coming from Algeria, but in northern Mali, a Tuareg group, and the Mujao. So I was a bit puzzled by the complexity of those groups. You know, how come they are so numerous first, and what's the relation between those groups? And Akinin is bringing is explaining that with it's a sordid story. Seriously, it's pretty astonishing. He says that the reason why we have such complicated situation in northern Mali, it's because of the involvement of the Algerian intelligence service and Washington. So that's pretty surprising. And he started his article about a UN resolution from October 12 that it was the French who decided to ask Mali. It's a French resolution asking Mali to draw up a plan for a military mission to gain control of northern Mali. But Keenan says himself, well, it's fine to just control northern Mali, but there's a question we have to ask that no journalist asked, and the question is how this latest Tuareg rebellion was hijacked almost as soon as it started by a few hundred Islamist extremists. Because from the start, it was a Tuareg rebellion. And in a question of a few weeks or a few months, we have those several groups. And his answer borders from, well, it's pretty incredible. So, do you want to know the cause then?
Well, yeah, but yeah? Let's start with the meat.
Let's go with the meat.
Let's yeah. It goes back to the troubles in Algeria in the early 2000s.
Or even before that.
And has to do very much with how Algeria, trying to come out of its difficult time with the Islamists, was actually creating counter-Islamist organizations to combat the Islamists that were fighting them.
Yeah, well, there is... Akinin started digging up for information by looking at Bouteflika, the president of Algeria. And in 1999, Bouteflika tried to get some contact with the United States, because what Algeria had, the trouble for Algeria was trying to fight against Islamist groups in Algeria, but it was out of control.
Well, the Algerian government was out of control. Well, the atrocities that it had committed had made it a world pariah, and nobody wanted to talk to them.
Yes, but the thing they did is, in order to control, because in Algeria in the 90s there was the Groupe Islamiste Armé, the GIA, that was there, and there's the GSPC also. And what the Algerian government decided to do is infiltrate some people from the DRS, it's the Algerian intelligence, in order to monitor those groups. It got out of control, and then the Algeria was considered as a rogue country. Yes, exactly.
And there was lots of at that point Algerian refugees came to Canada, and they would never get sent back, even if their refugee claims were refused, simply because the country was so dangerous.
So what happened then is Bouteflika tried first to bring back some standing in the world to Algeria. And also at the same time, he wanted to have more high-tech weaponry in order to fight against Islamist group. But this country was suffering from embargoes. So he decided to go and ask for the American government. But at the time...
He met Bush himself.
He tried to contact Clinton, but the relation between the Bouteflika and Clinton were bad. And He visited Bush after his election in July 2001. And Bouteflika asked Bush its needs about a weapon, and you know, the idea that he fights terrorists, he would fight terrorists with those weapons. But he didn't really have an ear from Bush until...
He got a lukewarm reception, and then, of course, comes 9-1-1.
Exactly. Comes 9-1-1. Now the U.S. starts to listen to the Bouteflika, and according to Keenan, in the next 4 years, he went to Washington 6 times. Bouteflika went over there 6 times.
After a decade with only one meeting, then over 4 years, he gets 6. Okay.
Yeah. So for Keenan now, the Algerians wanted more terrorism in the region to legitimize their need for high-tech weaponry.
So it was in their interest to emphasize the terrorist threat.
Exactly.
So that the Americans would arm them to fight the terrorists.
Exactly. And on the other hand, for the Americans, they saw the development of terrorism as providing the justification for launching a new front in the war on terror, the global war on terror in the Sahara region. So that's what Kinnon says. So that's why the contact between Bouteflika and Bush, or the relation between Algeria and the United States, was fruitful, and both had an interest in steering up those terrorist activities. So it led to some operations that Kinnon calls false flag operation.
Yes, these are famous.
Yeah. So it's since the ACME was formed, some members come from Algerian Islamist groups. The several leaders from the ACME are, according to Kinnon, DRS agents, Algerian agents. And for the Algerian government, that's the group that has to be lift up in order to justify the buying of high-tech weapon. And for the American, that's the group that would be the main target to justify their presence in the global on the global war on terror.
Now recall to our listeners that this whole American strategy of fabricated reasons for invading other countries goes back many years, 100 years or more, till Theodore Roosevelt invading Cuba and the Philippines, the Americans going into Vietnam, the intervention in Chile was all false flag intervention.
Well, I know that Kinnon uses the example of Cuba, but in the 60s, the failed attempt to invade Cuba in 61.
Oh, yeah.
There was a new
Bay
operation.
Of Pigs, the whole thing there.
Kennedy was, some people in the army presented a new kind of false flag operation that he could use. It was Operation Northwood, and it was a simple operation to create terrorist attack on the American soil, sinking ships from people leaving Cuba to the United States, and putting and simply creating civil disorder within the United States, and pointing Cuba for to be responsible.
The home of all terrorism, the source of all evil.
So if I understand Kinnon, JFK, Kennedy rejected the plan, but Rumsfeld, who was with Bush in 2002, they said, well, let's apply it, but in the Saharan region. So the first operation that was put in place was in 2003, the first one, and it was through the Algerian government. So it's not the American that went there, it's Algeria. So it's the DRS infiltrated an Islamist group in Algeria, and the agent was named Amari Saifi. He had several nicknames, but he was the one responsible for taking 32 Europeans as hostages in the Algerian Sahara. And Bush quickly branded that guy as an Osama bin Laden's man in the Sahara.
It should be recalled that before this time, mm-hmm. it was quite a common practice, and I even know people of my generation and more recently who would go from Europe across the Sahara by Land Rover or whatever it means, and this was the big expedition. There even was a race from Paris to Dakar across the Sahara. And here now are 32 tourists doing the same sort of wonderful explorer thing and getting caught.
Yeah. So if I continue, because I have to end that story, but if I understand now the plan that I was talking about Rumsfeld going to Bush and say, okay, let's try that in the Saharan desert. It was in 2002, and if I understand from what Kinnon says in his article, that guy, that Saifi, the one who took the European hostages in Sahara, was a pilot operation from a group, an American group, the Proactive Preemptive Operation Groups. I think it has an acronym P20G, something like that. And their goal was, if I read it properly, would be to carry out secret missions to stimulate reactions among terrorist groups by provoking them into undertaking violent acts that would expose them to counterattacks by U.S. forces. So, like I said, let's stir up some terrorism so we justify the fact that we can counterattack. So, and now it's all around ACME. So now, well, if you listen well, you say, well, what about Mujao? What about Ansar Dine? What about the two other groups? We didn't talk about them. The problem is the MNLA, which is the terror group that is not really religious. They succeeded in taking over northern Mali, and it took Algerian by surprise.
And it was a very effective operation. They were well organized, well armed. Knew where they were going, know the land.
Yes, like you said, several of them came back from Libya, well armed, disillusioned. But anyway, the thing is, the Algerian didn't expect them to win. They was thinking, well, it's another Tuareg group. It's gonna fail. No, they succeeded. So for the Algerian and maybe for the Americans, they were not their men in the area. The ACME was there, but it's the MNLA that succeeded in taking control over northern Mali. So those false flag operations were threatened, actually, if I understand well what Keenan is writing. So what's the best thing to do? Well, according to Keenan, in December 2011, Algeria sent 200 special forces into the Azawad, actually northern Mali, protect ACME, so the Al-Qaeda in the desert, to assess the strength the strengths of the MNLA, see if they're beatable, and 3, establish 2 new Salafist jihadist group, Ansar Dine and Mujao, which would benefit from financial aid and training, military training. So this is it, and Keenan says, well, it's simple. Algeria is turning the region into a human catastrophic area. So now we talk about the involvement of foreign countries, like you were saying. So if I understand what Keenan says in his conclusion in his article, because he was already figuring out that we might have foreign intervention, that would mean that the plan from Algeria and the American behind is failing, saying that they could lose control of those several groups. Or what if the MNLA is able to pick up taking a fight against the three others? So, but it's an open question. We don't know. But for Keenan, Algeria might lose its little game of false flagging or playing the alchemist, or controlling three separate groups. They might lose control. So, because I remember seeing, reading about maybe peace process that would involve Algerian authorities, maybe the Algerian are.
This is not the first time, because one takes both the case of Libya and Syria, while the U.S. stands up on its hind feet and pretends that it's standing for democracy and all, who has it been inviting in and arming to overthrow the various regimes that it opposes? And those are very basically very fundamentalist Islamic and related to these groups in different ways. Mm-hmm. And doesn't take long before the Al-Qaeda, which they created in the first place, let's be very clear. And
you could go back to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and all.
Chief client, Saudi Arabia, supports in so many ways. Okay. So America has a very direct role in fomenting this kind. And what is the reason? Why would they want to do that? So what's at stake in northern Mali? Let's be very clear. This is America against anybody else who's trying to attack their resources. One of the more obvious is China coming in to make sure that it's got access to resources to keep its economic growth growing. And the United States is trying to ensure that the resources of the Sahara, we know of uranium, we know of gold, we know of...
Mali is one of the biggest gold producers in Africa. I heard about comments regarding Canadian involvement in Mali saying, well, sure, there's gold over there. I mean, the Canadian didn't want to protect that resources, those resources. But Keenan also said the same thing that you're saying about the Americans, saying that they have to protect mainly oil in the continent. So there's an interest there. No, it's pretty, not surprising, but
But from
it explains,
an
it explains the complexity of
perspective,
the
I'm going to take and, the old guy here yeah. with his old glasses, and colonialism is not yeah. dead. And, you know, if these poor, benighted African countries can't keep it together, then we'll just have to send in the troops to once more save the day. And that's what it's building towards with the Canadian debate around will we be there, will we not?
So I think in conclusion for that, on that subject, Keenan in his article is referring to a book that he will publish in 2013. So it's called The Dying Sahara, and he's putting in there several information that he got, specifically this declassified information from the NSA in the United States. But that's what he says. Much of the terrorist landscape that Algeria and its Western allies have painted in the Sahara area it's completely false. Okay, it's we have to dig up the information and find what truly is happening. So in the book is that's what he is proclaiming the Dying Sahara. I guess he will add some more information to proclaim that. What is written in this article is well documented.
And then I would refer you to an article in the December 17th issue of the Socialist Project, the bulletin by the Socialist Project. It's United States and Al-Qaeda, Strange Bedfellows by Hassan Engardezi, who's of Pakistan background and who is currently living in Canada, but was a professor of sociology at the Punjab University in Lahore. And his claim about the war on terror is very much that it's just a new form of keeping control and calling on Al-Qaeda to help, not to hinder this control.
Okay.
So there's much more to read. Oh, and don't forget, get that article out of the New Internationalist. Get this article out of the Socialist Project. Excellent reading.
I think...
We'll take a better...
Yeah.